and welcome to the big show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in technology and what a technology week it has been. Twitter has become absolutely overgrown with Cecil the Lion memes. Windows 10, of course, got released yesterday. And finally, Edward Snowden has been confirmed as he's not getting off the hook. Thank you, chat room. He's not getting off the hook. He has been told he's never going to get a pardon. Which, it's not good, is it? No. So there you go. If you're a secret holder, don't give them away. Joining me to discuss the rest of the news that actually matters is a fantastic panel. A slightly abridged panel, it has to be said, because we've had a late calling off. But by no means is this to detract from the fact that we have, in the house, Michael Jackson himself, impersonator anyway, big Chris Ashley.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I think the singing is always...
You're charging up on some Michael Jackson before I got out. You know, I always like to have the most amount of energy I can have before I can come on here, and there's nothing that's going to give it to me more than Mr. MJ himself.
Well, the singing's pretty close, dude, but I think you got to work on the look.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm a little dark.
You're doing a bit more Bobby Womack for me, I have to say.
I heard there's a couple things I can do to, fix that.
Oh, man, you and me could make about 8 Michael Jackson. We could be the Jackson 5 and have a few left over.
Well, Jackson 3 today, right?
Yeah. What have you been up to then? You've been playing with Windows 10.
Oh, man, I did myself a favor and I said, you know, every time something like this comes out, I immediately rush to all the betas and all the alphas. And when it really rolls out, I lose all the excitement because I've been running it for months. This time I didn't do that. I absolutely waited until yesterday, the actual release, to download and install Windows 10. I got a little antsy a couple days beforehand. I was looking for a copy, but I was glad I couldn't get my hand on it immediately. And I'm glad I waited, because all that excitement that you get when you download and install an operating system you love, it hits you right back, and it was exactly what I wanted. So yeah, so there's plenty to talk about with Windows 10, but so far so good with it.
We will save it for the show, absolutely. No, we didn't do a Mac show this afternoon, so we're going to do the big Mac show. So Mac stories are not off limits, which is going to be a fantastic uplift to Jeffrey.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I didn't come with an Apple-related story today, but I could change that if you want. When you said, Michael Jackson impersonator, I was surprised to find out that I'm not the only one.
Well, no, Michael and Jackson were grave robbers, I think.
You are not the only one. Oh. You are not alone.
Yeah. Well, okay, that explains the awkward looks I was getting.
Yeah, and we've got to avoid any Michael Jackson jokes because Chris actually likes him. And last but by no means least, the man who is the Michael Jackson of Norfolk, as he can sing really well is what I mean, nothing more. It's Righty Boy.
Come on, my boy.
Come on there, Doobie Boy.
Whoa. Come
on. Oh, dude.
Will you be checking my bad self?
The way
you do be making me the way you do be feeling.
The way you do be making me feel.
Oh, wow.
What you been up to, pal?
Well, one day left in the world of IT support, and then start Monday into the world of design and no more fixing printers and people's broken emails. So I'm on top of the world, mate.
And start working for Hotboss.
Hotboss. I know.
Yeah.
Hotboss.
Yeah. Does she know that's her nickname?
She doesn't yet. I'm sure she's going to find out, because she needs to show her this show. She quite likes this, what we do here.
Does she?
Sure she'll find out.
What's her actual name?
I won't divulge.
Just Christian name.
Sexy.
No, it's not.
Anyway. It could be you.
I haven't got the job until Monday. Maybe next week when she
hello, Paul's new boss. Paul was showing everyone at the bash a picture of you, and we all agreed that your nickname is now Hot Boss. So, well done.
I haven't seen a picture of Hot Boss yet. We need to fix this.
I'll text you my phone number. Let's pull a picture of my phone number.
Okay, same colour as my belly.
I've okayed it with my wife. It's all fine. The week in technology, what's going on, what's been happening, what's up, what's down, and what's in and what's out. I think we should start with Windows 10, really, because, I mean, of the earth-shattering news, Windows X. Is that, how unfortunate is that? But everyone's going to call it Windows X instead of calling it Windows 10, just like Mac OS 10 has hit the ground running. And Chris, you have installed, and Righty, I'm taking you've installed.
Oh, indeed, sir, yes.
Right, so Jeffrey, have you installed?
No, actually, I was going to install it under Parallels on my Mac yesterday, and I got real busy and didn't have time. And then watching all the complaints on Twitter where people were having horrible problems where they couldn't get it to download and stuff, I'm thinking, I'll wait a couple days so that everyone that really needs to have it can get it installed, the servers will catch up, and then I'll go ahead and pop it on.
So, I mean, everyone's raving. Everyone's saying it's not shit.
It's not even close. And honestly, I'll say it again. It really, even though time would not permit, in my opinion, but this is what Windows 8 should have been. If this was what Windows 8 was, it would be, the last couple of years would be entirely different conversations. But be that as it may, I didn't have any issues downloading it. Right. And I really liked the way that Microsoft scaled out the ability to get the update. Everybody who had a valid machine had a little Windows icon in their sys tray, barring any issues. I think there was something you had to delete if it wasn't showing up. But it was a little icon in the sys tray down in the bottom right-hand corner of the computer that said, hey, do you want a free upgrade to Windows 10? All you had to do was click on it. And then when you clicked on it, you just registered your PC by accepting the terms, which essentially is saying Microsoft can update your computer anytime, every time. Other than that, you know, standard stuff. But once you did that, in the background, it downloaded Windows 10 for you. Mm. And so when I was checking like all day just to see if I got it early on the 28th. So I said, forget it. I'll just, you know, check it on Wednesday morning on the 29th. And sure enough, I came downstairs. I relaunched that little app down in the sys tray. And it said, hey, you're ready. Do you want to upgrade? I said, yes. And I went and did my daughter's hair, made her breakfast, took her to YMCA, came back home. It was in the last throes of the install, went through the setup, and boom, I was running Windows 10.
Which is, of course, the way that all installations of OSs should be measured.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Now, of course, did other people have issues? Most certainly. I think at one point they had a counter going up, and it seemed like they were getting 16 upgrades a second yesterday.
Wow.
So I'd love to see some network stats for how the internet handled it. I know that trying to play on Xbox yesterday was a nightmare. And I can't say for sure if they're on the same networks or whatever, but I just know that everybody was seeing connection issues. Everybody was seeing, you couldn't see a friends list. The gaming was terrible yesterday on the Xbox platform. And I can't imagine that everybody downloading Windows 10 yesterday didn't have anything to do with that. But with that being said, the transit, I decided to do an upgrade because I figured most people that I'm going to be helping and talking to are going to go through the upgrade. So rather than do my traditional clean install, I just did the upgrade. And that went smoothly. I mean, the computer came back up. Walk through a couple things. Of course, you need to re-log into your email. You put those passwords back in. You had to set up OneDrive again because it syncs a little bit differently than before. But aside from that, pretty much it was business as usual. Immediately, you take to the new UI. Clicking on the start screen gives you the pop-up, kind of the old-school start. It's kind of a mix between the tiled start screen that was in Windows 8 and the old school start screen where you get the little pop-up that with all your tiles inside of that little pop-up as opposed to it taking over the whole screen. I have to say that I didn't have a problem running the Microsoft apps like Facebook and Twitter full screen, but I gotta say it is so slick that it launches in Windows now in separate windows or in smaller windows where I can still use the desktop. It's really embracing the PC part of the PC. Now I have the mini HP 7-inch Stream tablet, and you pop that thing in the tablet mode and you don't get the desktop. You don't even see the desktop at all, nor the option to get to the desktop until you take it out of tablet mode, and that works just fine too. That's where you kind of go back to the old, to the Windows 8 tile,
which is the way
tiles
it should have been. I mean, that was the whole point. You know, that everyone's, I don't think everyone did, but I certainly said that Windows 8 was ahead of its time because it was built for a touch interface, and what you needed was a touchscreen computer to make it really feel at home. So you've still got that option. Right, I mean, Muller's here in the chat room. He said, or Muller's here in the studio, actually. He said, you said yours went pretty well.
Yeah, that's a reboot once.
Just one reboot and that was it, yeah. Okay. Righty, how did yours go?
Well, I had a little bit of a different... I had a few different kind of installs. I was doing the PCs at home because the girls here have got PC laptops where you could go to the... We were running the preview and you could go to the website, hit the upgrade button. That would then send a command to Windows Update that then allowed you to then reboot, install Windows 10. And obviously, as of yesterday, they got the full version. The one that I'm doing here is I'm running on Bootcam on my iMac. And that wouldn't run the upgrade solution that they had on the website. I then downloaded the ISO, burnt it to a USB stick, plugged that straight in. The only issue I had is that if you do the upgrade path via the website, it kept all your apps. If you do it via the ISO, it wouldn't give me the... it wouldn't allow me to keep all my apps, so like Office and all that disappeared, but reinstalling wasn't a problem. But even on an iMac in Bootcamp, it's so slick, and we've got a couple of i5 laptops, only 4 gig of RAM, which were running like dogs on Windows 7, but after the upgrade to Windows 10, just running great. And my daughter, who's obviously a fay with Mac, iOS, Android, all those sort of things, really likes Windows 10. And also you want to know is, does Minecraft run? Of course it runs brilliantly, and it runs faster. Yeah, the better. Whole thing just seems so slick.
Yeah, no. I saw a thing today where they were talking about Windows or Microsoft's ability to count to 10. And it did 1, 2, 3, and then it started off on 95, 98, okay. NT, 2000, went all the way up. And I got to the end, and I read it, and I was like, there's no ME. Even the piss takers want to forget ME.
No, God, yeah. I ran that bad. Yeah.
Yeah, all right, so I have a prediction on the feature that people are ultimately going to hate the most out of Windows 10, and it's the sharing Wi-Fi network password thing.
Oh, which yes.
I can't even figure out how that could have gotten out of a committee inside Microsoft, because that sounds like the single worst idea they possibly could have come up with.
Well, that's actually been around since Windows 8. And it's actually really slick. I'm not too sure.
Well, hate it. Well, hang on a second. So what frustrates you about that feature, Jeff? And then, Chris, clarify what's going wrong there.
All right. So now, keep in mind, since I haven't had a chance to install Windows 10, I haven't played with it yet. But the thing where you have to go and rename your network to exclude it from just automatically sharing your Wi-Fi password with people.
That seems crazy.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's been around since 8.
Yeah, the sharing of passwords is in Windows Phone, and what it does is it allows, like, for example, like anytime I rebuild my computer, because it's shared, I didn't have to do anything to connect my device to the Wi-Fi. It already knew the password because it was shared. You understand what I'm saying? So
yeah. Okay. So now the way it was described to me, and if I'm wrong, I would love to be corrected. But the way it works now, if I have the password to your network, I can now propagate that out to my friends. So more people can get your password without your explicit authorization.
Well, it's the Wi-Fi sense. It's the people who are in your Outlook contacts and your Skype contacts. I don't know how it propagates outside.
That's a fair few people.
I don't know if Chris had a Skype contact with Jeff, if you can do it beyond that. But what I understood was if people within your circle of friends who you are, your contact within the social media or Skype or Outlook.
Okay.
It does sends an encrypted.
Yeah, I don't remember it being getting that free pass to the next person.
No, it's encrypted now, within your ring of friends.
All right. So now I have a question. why is it a setting that you disable by having to change the name of your network to something Microsoft specifies, as opposed to having a switch in an interface where you just uncheck, share my password with everyone?
I don't know. I don't work for Microsoft.
I don't get why they would do that. But anyhow, but my guess is, since this is a feature that's getting a lot of press this time around, it's the feature that's going to piss off a lot of people.
Yeah. Let's see. Connect a network shared by my contacts.
Yeah, Microsoft solution for those concerns requires you to change the name of the SSID, the Wi-Fi network, to include the text _ opt out.
I've got to say,
that's quite harsh. I didn't know that until I just read it. You've got to change your SSID to network name _ opt out to opt out of this service. I did not realize that.
Oh, bugger.
Who thought that was a good idea? And I know it's a rhetorical question.
Yeah, of course.
I've just got a real deja vu of the fact that this is like Mac versus PC advert. And it's the fact that we've got Jeff Gamet, who looks a little bit like John Hodgman on the right-hand side, and we've got Chris Ashley on the other side, who looks just like Justin Long on the other side, doing Mac versus PC here. This is so cool.
We're in the winner.
Chris is frozen, though. Windows 10 is obviously shit.
he just changed SSID, that's why.
Stop everyone getting this. He's gone.
His _ opt out is gone.
Yeah, I bet that's what's happened. He just changed his SID name.
He hadn't read that bit, and now he has done it.
Due to the terms of service, Microsoft now owns your Wi-Fi network. If you would like it back, please pay the sum of. That's what it is. That's what Windows 10. That's where Windows 10's revenue stream's coming from.
Right. Well, I'm gonna get a kicking from Jifro Jim tomorrow about this. The fact that I have to change my Wi-Fi, my SSID, to not allow it to share with people. That's a bit harsh.
Chris is gone. I can't
believe. Yeah, because, you know, everyone wants to have a company tell them how they have to name their network.
I feel quite embarrassed that I didn't actually notice that until tonight. That's rather embarrassing, because I've been going how wonderful that is. But that's a...
Not
wonderful.
Obviously, in our circles, we have a lot... They're saying, you know, you share with your Skype friends. We have quite a lot of people in our Skype contacts, don't we?
Yes.
So you
it probably you doesn't help that you found out about this setting from the guy that's the managing editor of the Mac Observer.
You have an incoming call from Chris Ashley.
But I still love you.
I still love you, sir.
I got a jealous computer here.
Yeah, Windows 10 shit, innit, Chris?
I got a jealous computer. The one that's over there. We're not going to mention so much about it. Little jealous guy over there. Just waiting for Windows 10.
Now we figured you were just changing your SSID.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I think when you set up a network, isn't there an option? And I haven't played right because I didn't have to set it up. So you'll have to forgive my ignorance. But I thought there was also an option when you set up the network to check whether it's allowed to be shared or not.
Share my ID.
I don't know. The only thing that I've seen people talking about is the thing where you have to change the SSID.
So right, there's a feature where there's a checkbox, and by default, of course, it's unchecked, or it's checked rather, which says share my password globally. Yeah,
right.
That's the one. Yeah, right.
So if you don't check it, then it doesn't become a shared network. if I'm understanding that correctly.
Yeah, can you just imagine, Chris puts Windows 10 on his new machine on the other side of the room, and an orphan in Somalia gets a text that's got his password on.
There you go, bud, free internet.
He's sitting there scrolling through all his Wi-Fi stuff. No. So, I mean, that's a bit of a hole then, it might be fair to say. Everyone's agreed. Okay, fair enough. Moving on. Any cool features in Windows 10 that are the must-haves that you're like, man, they should have been doing this 10 years ago?
Oh, okay. I got to. The very first thing I got to talk about is the this game streaming from the Xbox.
Yeah.
I had to give that a go. Did you give that a go?
No. So tell us more about it, because I'm a Mac user, okay. So I haven't got a Windows
machine.
Okay,
so essentially, what this allows you to do is take your Xbox controller, and the same one that you have already, use the USB adapter that charges it, plug it into your PC. The PC will automatically install the drivers for it. When you launch the Xbox app on your PC, there's an option to do streaming. And what it'll do is connect to your Xbox, and it'll stream the video from the Xbox to your PC. So let's say I'm on my lunch break and I say, you know what? I want to see what they're selling at the vendors in the tower and in Destiny. I can connect my controller, launch Destiny, use my controller, and I'm playing the game sitting in my office. At the same time, it's simultaneously going on the in my TV room. Yeah. It was so cool.
Yeah.
I was just sitting here like, this is so awesome. So I decided, okay, now let's put this thing to the test. I went into a PvP, a player versus player match. I was in the middle of the pack at the end. It's a little too slow for something that intense.
Right.
Because, you know, people running up on you, you're trying to maneuver to get that, you know, to get that kill before they can kill you. But, you know, I was in the middle of the pack. So I'm not the best PvP player by any sense of the imagination. But if you're like, you're sitting here like, oh, man, I got to go, you know, turn these bounties in, or I got to go pick up this particular material while you're doing some work or doing whatever in your office, it works great. It's really good. Really, really good.
So you can't use it for like a two-player thing where you can have a full screen to yourself and the opposition can have a full screen to itself.
No, that's no, it's not. Yeah, you can't do that. But, you know, for taking your content off of your Xbox and putting it on your PC, absolutely love the feature. Excellent. Already. I can see myself using it quite often.
Righty, any features you've fallen in love with instantly?
Well, it sounds ironic leaving IT support for a while, but the power of having the live tiles in the start menu is obviously, as a business, you can customize those, because the main problem we have is communication. And we always send out things via the IT support help desk, and people just delete them because it's from the IT support help desk. Yeah. So some people have rules set up. If the IT department send you an email, delete. And we're kind of thinking, well, the live tile would be brilliant for that. You know, and you could actually put notifications and things that are coming up in there. And I think it was great for Windows 8 if you had a tablet, but putting it in the start menu is really fabulous.
Yeah, that's by far always been one of my favorite features of what Microsoft did with the platform. I mean, it really says a lot. You know, I've been playing, there's no flagship phone on Windows Phone right now, and I'm killing, dying for something new. So I grabbed an iPhone. I said, I'm going to play with an iPhone. I can't beat it up if I haven't used it in years. So I grabbed one to play with it until the new Windows phones come out. And I just, one of the very first things you miss right off the bat is those live tiles, because you miss that glance ability. I love that. You know, quickly, you know, hitting friend, the same thing here. I click the start button. I can see, okay, there's a quick email that came in. Here's my next meeting on my calendar. Weather, it's all right there. Top stories. Did somebody send me a message on Xbox? You know, do they want to jump into a game? It's all right there. It's just one of my favorite features that they've done. It's so useful. A lot of haters like to dismiss it, but you know, haters gonna hate.
No, it is a good feature.
It's a great feature.
It's okay. So when the live tiles thing came to Windows phones, that was one of those features that I looked at and I'm like, okay, this is awesome. This is Microsoft really thinking outside the box and really innovating with an interface. And I think it's absolutely great. And I'm glad it's there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the customization ability, the customization factors of Windows for the mobile platform at 8 was awesome. And it still kills iOS in terms of user interface. iOS as a user interface looks old and haggard in comparison to the Windows tiles. And the, I mean, Ellis has got his, and he's got like all of his friends listed. So, you know, the first few lines are the key things that he wants. And he's got all of his mates listed below in a tile. And he just scrolls through until he sees the one he wants, sees the face he wants, and bang, he's talking to that person then on the phone or on the text or whatever. It's superb. The ability he can have what he likes on that ferns page. Anything, as long as there's a background process, a background icon that he can refer to, that's it. He can have it on the front page. And that's what iOS should be. You shouldn't have to deal with Apple's frigging stocks and shares thing and that kind of shit.
Well, it's like the setup Jim's got. He's got like multiple inboxes on his Windows phone, and he has an icon for each one of those inboxes, and he can see what's coming in. Because normally if you've got mail on iOS, it says you've got a mail, but you don't know which inbox has come into. With Windows phone, you know exactly which inbox is getting updated. And if you can have that on Windows 10 as well, that's a killer.
I've got, I mean, on Sparrow, just simple things like on Sparrow for mail for OS 10, I've got individual icons that I've made for each of the, so the one that I always use on Amazon has got a shopping cart on it, and the one that's my own personal one has got a picture of me, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. That's the level of customization that people want, and people have to give it, and you can't take the hand that Apple has got at the moment of restricting people and saying, no, you've got to, it's our way or the highway. Piss off, Apple. That's not what I want. Let me do what I fancy.
Sparrow is pretty cool.
Sparrow's awesome. Mm. Love Sparrow. Any features that you've seen advertised, Jeff, that you can't wait to try in this, or is it just purely a journalistic exploit for you?
It's mostly, I'm just really curious, excuse me, how Windows 10 works. I want to try it out, and what I'm hoping is that when I really start diving into it, I find things that I get excited about, because if there's stuff that Microsoft is doing that excites me, that means that Apple and Microsoft are getting some serious competition for features at the operating system level, and that means that ultimately it doesn't matter what operating system we use, we all end up with something better out of it. So I want to be very pleasantly wowed when I start playing with Windows 10.
And the other thing to remember is this is the last official version of Windows. There's not going to be Windows 11 or anything like this. It's now just going to be upgrades coming forward to in the 10. Future. Because Vista was a bit of a letdown. Windows 7 was the savior of that. Windows 8 and 8.1 really didn't do anything, and
I can't see them doing that, because the brandability and the marketability of 11 over 10, I can't see them resisting that exploit. It just doesn't.
But that's what they're saying. They're saying.
They're saying that now, but I think that's horseshit. They're not going to.
You know that they want to be able to say this version goes all the way to 11.
But the one thing I want to think about is, it's all been very consumer focused up until now. In 24 hours, it's not my problem, but I'd love to see how this fits into enterprise.
Well, I think most of the marketing has been consumer phone focused, but they've definitely talked about how they intend for this to be definitely geared towards the enterprise as well, especially with things like Cortana, being able to launch Outlook and recite and go through your contacts and actually send emails without even touching the keyboard. So there'll be some cool things that you can do, but they've definitely talked a lot about the security. One of the big things that I tried and tried and tried to get work on my, I have the original Surface, was a Windows Hello. And, you know, everybody, you know, I can't imagine how much money organizations waste on password management. So the fact that Microsoft is taking something that you may initially think is mundane and who cares, but there's so many password management tools, reset tools, who's logging in, tracking down multiple attempts from different locations as a security breach. I mean, we all know security breaches are ramping up big time. So the fact that people are removing, Microsoft's making the attempt to remove the need to type a password in the first place out with Windows Hello, which is essentially new ways of logging in via biometrics. So on the Windows 10 phones, on the new devices, there's rumored to be iris scanners on the 950s or the 940s, whichever number they go with. On Windows 10, with supported cameras, You'll be able to do facial recognition. I set it up, but the camera keeps crashing. And they said you need a fourth generation Intel processor, which I know that the original Surface doesn't have, but I tried to get it to work. But that to me is kind of awesome from a enterprise standpoint, because the password management is still a big business.
There's an interesting point from Batwinch here. She said, I feel so out of date because my work operating system is still Windows XP. But, I mean, you're not alone there, mate. I mean, there is a massive, and I still spend most of my time in corporations that are running Windows XP. And even ones that were sub 30 employees, I still see XP on the desktop. And I mean, as Microsoft missed a trick in letting everyone who's got XP upgrade to 10 as well. They're insisting 7 and 8, isn't it? You have to be 7 or 8. You can't do it with XP. Am I right there?
I think you're totally right.
Yeah.
I disagree with that. You know, it's funny because I was listening to a conversation that was pointed out to me on, what's that show? Anyway, one of the Apple shows. And one of the things that we're pointing out is still how bloated and how bad iTunes is.
Oh, and, man, it's the worst.
And the host actually took some time and said, well, one of the reasons that Apple can't fix iTunes as quickly as, you know, we would like is because it touches so many different people and so many different avenues. So they can't just wholesale change it without affecting the majority of people who don't go through changes like that. They don't upgrade like that when it comes to new technology. And they would displace that. And I just couldn't help but sit there and laugh. I was like, you just described Microsoft and Windows, how it's been for so long. It's bloated. It became big. It does so many things. But they know that the minority are on the lower end and they can't wholesale change it. And look what happened when they did. Every time they've wholesale changed the UI, it's an uproar. And so at some point, we all know you're going to have to rip the Band-Aid off. You're going to have to do it. And so, you know, how long should Microsoft continue to support something that's, what, almost, what, 15, 20 years old now?
Mm-hmm. Well, giving Windows XP a free upgrade path, I think would have been a great way to rip that Band-Aid off, because there's a lot of people that, as soon as they see free, are suddenly a lot more open to change.
Yeah, there's a large proportion that gets them involved. And then if they're on a consistent upgrade path, then you've got more ability to be bloatless. I mean, back what you're saying, yeah, but you're considering this is a bad thing where I work. Mate, there is places out there still running Windows 3.1.1 because it's the only system that will give them data interface to the operational systems of the device, the plane,
their
the
ATM.
Train, the car, the whatever it is that's running. That'll let them get the stuff and
exactly
let them
it.
Do the monitoring and that kind of thing. So I don't think you're in a worse place because you run Windows XP. You're not at more risk because you're running Windows XP. In fact, probably a lot of the systems that you're working on will only work with XP. So there is no upgrade path anyway. But there's a lot of companies out there who are sitting just doing basic stuff like email, spreadsheets, etc., who would really benefit from upgrading to 10, and Microsoft have shut the door on them.
Do we know that 10 would run on, because a lot of the systems run XP are, like you say, old systems.
Well, you're talking about
Wise
terminals.
Microsoft confident that it would run on old systems?
Well, I mean, you're the man. Tell me, would a five-year-old Wise terminal run Windows 10? The answer, I'm guessing, is probably no.
Probably not.
I would say it'd be iffy. You'd probably not be it wouldn't be the best experience, but if you remember, one of the things that Microsoft did with Windows 8 was to lower the amount of resources that was required to run it. And so as you started coming out with these, you know, the like the HP Stream and all of that, that could run Windows 7 without issue. You know, it wasn't as bad as like the old netbook days where you had a full operating system on such a tiny processor and such a low amount of memory. They've really done a good job. So it'd be a toss-up, you know, but again, absolutely would not be the best experience running on these old machines.
But the one thing, Windows 10, a version of Windows 10 does run on the Raspberry Pi. So it does run on lower kind of spec kit, doesn't it? So they could do it.
Right, yeah, maybe it would.
I'm surprised there's not a kind of cut down version that for people who've got probably, I don't know, 8 or 9 year old PCs or laptops, it could run the minimum. Like when Alan did the talk at the Bash, he was talking about how it was going to update for RT, because people are going, well, RT is not going to get Windows 10, but it's going to get some of the features. So you could offer people on XP a certain amount of the features, maybe speed it up a bit of security and that sort of thing. People may be willing to upgrade. I don't think people who are running 7 or 8 year old laptops would get Windows 10 fully running very well. If you could say, if you are running a, you know, Microsoft always did it for Windows 7 and Windows 8, you can run a diagnostic on your PC as if it had run, and it could do now through the web, say, okay, you've got an old PC, we'll give you this light version. But they haven't done anything like that at all.
Yeah, but they still will check it though to see if it's a valid machine to run the operating system. But yeah, it'd be a toss-up. Like I said, you'd have to check to see. But I'd be willing to bet that a great many of them would actually support running it.
There we go. Jeffrey, did you bring a story for us, sir?
Oh, I did, but I forgot to drop a link in for you. So how about if I do that right now?
Go ahead. Pad time.
All right.
There we go.
There we go. Maybe. There we go. Okay. So if you're a fan of Jeeps and probably a lot of other Chrysler vehicles, you are at risk of having your car hacked. And there's a couple guys that have done actual demonstrations of this. And it's something that Chrysler is now having to look at, and they've actually had to issue a recall on Jeeps so that they can do a software patch on this and fix the security problem. So the way it works, the system that's built into the car so that it can do all the wireless things that it's going to do, you know, location finding and all that can be tracked through the internet. And so you can find the unique IP address for individual cars, figure out exactly where they are, and then the exact procedure that you use to hack the cars hasn't been released, which is a good thing, but it's coming soon. But once the car's been hacked, then you can remotely, anywhere you have an internet connection, take control over the car. You can shut off the brakes. You can shut down the transmission. You can steer the car. You turn on the radio, make it play whatever you want, put messages up on the display screen. It's crazy just how much you can do with a Jeep once it's been hacked.
Now, it says remote, but I mean, are we talking about...
We're talking hands-off remote. We're talking so the demo that these guys did, they were controlling a Jeep they were in St. Louis, I think, and the car was in like Kansas City or something. Okay, they were completely isolated from the vehicle that they took over and were controlling.
Okay, so just for anyone that's listening who thinks that they randomly just decided, okay, I found this on a satellite. They must have had physical access to make this hack stick to start with.
No.
Well,
they did not need physical access. Now, the car
Jeff, stop.
A reporter's car. And he gave them permission to do this.
Yeah, no, but hang on, stop, Jeff. What I'm saying is you can't sit in St. Louis and pick a random car in Kansas City and take it over.
Yes, you can.
What, without having established any link prior?
Right. They have an app that they use, excuse me, and they are just scanning for the IP addresses for the cars. And when they find them, then they have something that they can do, which they have not disclosed yet. And they can take control of the car.
Deep Pan says, didn't this Jeep have a firmware update before this was able?
I don't believe so.
I think they had recently done an update, but I don't think that update had anything to do with... It didn't stop what these guys were able to do, because that's why they're still issuing a recall.
Yeah, that's true. If they did have a firmware update, it didn't fix the problem.
And I'm just floored at the fact that the one.
Yeah, as I'm remembering the article as well, they could definitely, they had a way to, without even ever seeing the car, to be able to track down the cars. So that was one of the things they talked about. I can't find the exact line, but that was the case. It's amazing because these guys had actually been doing this research for years. And they had actually pointed out, because the first time they hacked the vehicle, they had done it before. But that required physical access. So they were doing it from the back seat. So they had already told them years ago that, hey, this can be done. Okay. And it's evolved where they can do it remotely now.
Well, we did a story about a year ago about them sitting in the back seat and hacking the car in the front while the person was driving.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is the same guys. Now they're doing it over the internet. So they don't even need to be in the same city or the same country.
And your car's got to have an internet connection there, though, obviously.
Yes, but that internet connection can be a cellular connection. It doesn't have to be Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I mean, my car the other day when I was trying to Bluetooth my phone to it, it's never asked me to use an internet connection with my phone before. It's only ever done music and voice. And then the other day it suddenly says, do you want us to use internet as well? It's like, that's new. I don't work out how that's done that, because that's never asked me for that before. And I said, yes, of course, like a twat.
Yeah, and it's great because I just backed your car to the driveway.
Thanks. Oh. No, it's interesting. I think that's because I thought there was still need to be at least a proximity to get the connection to the car, but no, I guess
no. The proximity in this case is you need to be on Earth.
There is a certain element as well.
Yeah, they do have to know what the car's IP address is, though.
Yeah, but they can track those down. It just takes a while. And it's a random thing. So it's not like they can say, all right, we're going to target Ewan's car. They just watch their sniffing tool. And then every now and then it'll say, okay, we found a pickup truck in Louisiana or whatever. And yeah, so it's not like they can target individuals. It's just whatever IP addresses they manage to sniff out.
Oh, boys, I feel a Bond movie coming on.
Well, you know, this has been, I forgot who it was, but a lot of the conspiracy theorists have said that this is one of the ways they had killed a couple of people years ago, is they took over the vehicle. I can't remember exactly who it was, but
they can't steer, though.
I think it was somebody had to do with the car industry, but the point is that this is not, the fact that these guys are doing it, and I think even the NSA said, yeah, we already knew that a vulnerability existed to be able to do it, because they had done research on it strictly for learning how to stop it. But it's something that had been rumored for years that you could do these type of things and, you know, take somebody out.
Yeah. And car manufacturers haven't taken this nearly as seriously as they need to, although I believe that's changing right now.
And of course, Booker is rekindling the conspiracy theories now, saying that that's why Kennedy drove off the bridge, which I think he's referring to the Chappaquiddick incident in about 1960-61, which I think that's a bit of a push, mate. I think you might have to stoke that conspiracy theory a little bit more.
Let me see.
I'd stick with the Who Shot Kennedy from the Grassy Knoll if I were you. It's got more mileage. Excuse the pun.
I love that movie, by the way, Enemy of State.
Right, which is not what Trapper Quidditch is about. Quidditch is a
no,
is
I was Harry the Potter. From the chat room.
Righty boy, what was your story, old boy?
Well, shove it in the chat room, shall I? That'd be
shove it.
Of you, wouldn't it? Shove it in the chat room. Do you still love Twitter?
I do.
We'll see for how long, huh?
Well, it just seems that it's not as many people as we thought are liking it as much as they used to, because this week we had the quarterly earnings from Twitter. And in the last quarter, they've only actually grown by 8 million users. They went from 308 million to 316 million users. And apparently they're doing well on the monetization, although I was kind of confused that how is Twitter making money. But they're also leaking staff. They've all just lost their VP of product management. The product director's just gone south to another company as well. And Twitter actually said on the earnings call, which I listened to because I'm that sad, Jack Dorsey, who's the interim CEO. I think he was the original CEO, wasn't he? But he's interim at the moment. He's not satisfied with the growth in where Twitter's going. And if you look at the other kind of social networks, 8 million growth in users over a quarter is actually very slow when you're looking at the 1.6 billion or 1.4 billion on Facebook and the ever-growing things on Instagram and WhatsApp and all those sort of things. And I kind of thought about it. I thought, do you know what? I think I'm falling out of love with Twitter a little bit as well, because don't you find there's a lot of noise on there now? And that anything you want to really put out there kind of gets lost. Do you get that feeling at the moment?
That's usually to do with the number of followers that you've got, though. I mean, if you've got a shed load of followers of people that do that kind of thing or retweet that kind of thing, then yeah, you do get lost. And I've got a couple of people that retweet stuff that I really just don't give a shit about, but I don't want to unfollow them because they're nice people. And that's where the mute function kind of comes in. But unless everyone adheres to the convention of the hashtag that you want to mute or the word you want to mute, then it gets a bit lost. Bill, I'm talking to you about wrestling, by the way. I just thought it might have an effect and I'd get a bit less. My family, all of them are on Facebook. My son loves Facebook. He doesn't use Twitter that often. Sharon is total Facebook, hardly ever comes on Twitter. And it's really sad because I'm left here on Twitter with all you lot and my family aren't on there. I love Twitter. My interaction is with Twitter constantly. And it's because it's so quick, it's so easy, it's so visible. You just scroll through everything. Whereas Facebook on a phone is like shoving a stick in your eye. I mean, it's disgusting. Yep. And it's shit on the desktop as well, because you've got to go through a browser and all that bollocks. And I hate going through a fudging browser.
I don't think Facebook is the reason that people are moving away from Twitter, because doing a bit of research today and talking to 12-year-old daughter, and if you look at the top four apps on the iOS App Store at the moment, it's WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook Messenger. And I'm just wondering, you know, Facebook, Twitter's had a lot of bad press lately as well. And I'm just wondering if people are just kind of looking at, I know why my daughter doesn't want to go on Facebook, because mum and dad are there. That's a given. Mum and dad are on Facebook, kids don't want to go on Facebook. But they are using things like Instagram and WhatsApp because they are secure networks where they can do what they want to do, and they can talk with a group of like-minded individuals. You know, you probably find the same thing I do. You put something on Twitter that you probably want to target one person, but you probably get a reply from 10 other people who you didn't really want to talk to in the first place. But that's it.
The only time I have a big issue with Twitter is, well, not the only time, but one of the only times is when somebody's being automatically destroyed for something they said or did. I have such a problem with that. That it just annoys me. I tend to give people the benefit of the doubt. I understand people having a bad day. How can you hate Hulk Hogan? You know, it's just like, damn, I grew up watching that dude. He had a bad day. So, but when Twitter becomes that place, because it gives people the voice to get things out, especially in this social era where we're seeing, you know, just African Americans and this continual issue that you see with police here, okay, and now it's becoming a lot more in the face of people, even though, you know, we've been talking about this for years. That's where it's the good thing, but that same voice, That same power also then becomes, you know, the area where for one little thing you get vilified and tore down. So I think at the end of the day, the good's always going to outweigh the bad when it comes to this platform. But those are the times when I just see anybody, it could be anybody, something they said, it just becomes so awful and evil. And it's like, if this person did what they did, the stuff that you're saying is no better than what they did.
Well, there's an interesting one with the old Walter Palmer thing, because he's the guy who shot Cecil the Lion.
Yes.
And there's a picture out at the moment of the front of his doctor's or his dentist surgery, and it is just huge signs, rotting hell, Trophy hunting is dollars and ego, nothing more. Be nice to animals. Ashamed of yourself, Dr. Palmer. He's going to lose all his people. But in positive news for Walter, if he takes all of the stuffed lions that have been left outside the front and sticks them on eBay, he can probably retire. But, I mean...
so there is that.
His life is in utter ruin because of what he did. But there's a certain part of me, he's like, well, good, because you're a twat. Why would you go shooting lions? They're an endangered species. You should do something useful with it.
Mm.
You know, if you want to go shoot something, fine, go and shoot a managed herd, a managed population of something like, you know, deer is farmed for the purpose of hunting. Pheasants are farmed for the purposes of hunting. Go do that. That's fine. But don't go out and shoot wild animals that aren't farmed, that are on endangered lists or are vulnerable at the very best. You deserve what you got, mate. Stuff shit. So that's where Twitter's good in some respects and bad in as well, because, you know, he's lost in ruins now because of Twitter. But as long as the meme of Walter is true, that he actually did shoot and kill Cecil the Lion, then that's a positive. If he didn't, then that's where Twitter really falls badly wrong. And there was a thing with employees' expenses, and it showed you a picture of the Houses of Parliament, and it says employees debating child abuse, and there was like 10 people in there, MPs debating MPs' expenses, and the place was absolutely packed, and it was complete and utter bollocks. There were two completely different debates and absolutely sod all to do with the two issues that they were labelled with, because the meme rules, which it shouldn't.
That's the problem, because the main bulk of the noise is always, people tell me at work, is you can really do a really good job, but the people who make the most noise are the people who are the most unsatisfied and the most vocal. And that's what you see on Twitter, I think. I think you do see the people who've really got a bugbear or an axe to grind. There are the voices that rise to the top all of the time when you see the retweets on things. And, you know, it was really nice this weekend to see with the Hungarian Grand Prix. The lovely thing they're saying about Jules Bianchi, you know, it was lovely. It was some wonderful things, and that can be a really lovely thing. But certain things come up, you know, I don't know whether it would be political or topical, and there's some real hatred on Twitter, which you don't see on platforms like Facebook, because and it's not popular, but Google Plus, because you are a named person and
it's not global, right? Everything you put on Facebook doesn't necessarily radiate out to the rest of the world, whereas Twitter is meant to be that,
exactly.
Everything you put, everybody looking for it can find it.
Twitter. I think
at the end of the day, the point I was trying to make is, if somebody deserves a beating, give them the beating. But if you believe, because of your opinion, differs with this other person's opinion, but I'm going to give this guy this beating and start threatening his life and all that stuff, that's the stuff I can't get down with.
No, I can't deal with that. But the point is that Twitter is no worse or better than Facebook for that, because Facebook, if you share a post, it goes out to everyone you know. The person doesn't control it. You may be the friend of that person. So it's no different than a follow that you would get on Twitter and someone retweeting you and it going viral. It goes viral in exactly the same way.
Yeah. But obviously Twitter is seeing a serious slowdown. You know, they've never made the numbers of WhatsApp and the Facebook are doing, and they're in a serious kind of down spiral right now. And it just makes you wonder what they could do, because what is the value in Twitter? That's the question. You know, is there actual value in the 140 characters you put online?
For a lot of people, no. And now Twitter is looking at changing the interface so that we're looking at the tweets that are coming through our feeds in a different way. And I hope that if they do this, they do it in a smart way, as opposed to doing what Facebook does, where they just kind of mess up the way our feeds work. So we're not seeing everything we want to see, and we have to keep going and changing settings, and then they don't stick. But of course, for Facebook, it's all about, they want us to see content in the way they want us to see it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as far as 140 characters, what the value is, I think I'm the modern Chaucer with my tweets, to be honest.
Oh, Shakespeare.
Now I'm the monkey that's writing Shakespeare eventually in the Infinite Monkey Cage. You know. It's interesting. I hope Twitter's not doomed, because I live on there. I love it. So, sorry. It's been selfish, but...
Well, no, it was just interesting that they're seeing a slowdown, and there's a reason for that slowdown. Is it because of the social media? Is it because Twitter's like Facebook, mum and dad are there, so Instagram... I think kids are more into the things like Vine and the quick social media with photographs and all that sort of thing. That's maybe just a trend.
Yeah, where they don't have to write.
Yeah, maybe that's just what it is. Illiterate youth, that's what it is.
Illiterate youth.
Kids these days, get off my lawn.
Didn't they do pass the Dochi? I could have sworn.
And just so you know, Ewan, the guy I was talking about was Michael Hastings. He was a reporter. And there was and one of the things that they said in the report was that his car accelerated into a tree as opposed to decelerating, when you see you're about to hit a tree. So that's the conspiracy one. I'm not a big conspiracy guy, but that's the story I was talking about. I put the link in the chat.
Cool. Thanks, mate. My story, I'm going to put it in the chat room. Hang on. I'm crap, aren't I? I should have done this. He says, show you all up. There we go. That's my story. Kentucky man is arrested after shooting down a drone. In Hillview, Kentucky, resident William H. Meredith described... He was the penguin, wasn't he? Described this weekend, Sunday afternoon, the kids, my girls, were out the back on the deck and the neighbours were out in their yard. And they come in and said, Dad, there's a drone out there flying over everybody's yard. Meredith's neighbours saw it too and just hovered above our house and stayed there for a few minutes when she finally waved it off and took off. Said neighbour. So they're obviously using a camera, I think. Meredith grabbed his shotgun and waited to see if the drone crossed over his property. When it did, he took aim and shot it out of the sky. The owners showed up shortly afterwards, and the police right after. He was arrested and charged with first-degree criminal mischief and first-degree wanton endangerment before being released the next day. Meredith said he'll pursue legal action against the drone's owners. He didn't just fly over. If he had been moving, he had just kept moving, then it would have been one thing. But when he came directly over our heads and just hovered there, I felt like he hadn't got the right. You know, when you're in your own property within a 6-foot privacy fence, you've got an expectation of privacy. We don't know if he was looking at the girls. We don't know if he was looking for something to steal. Me, it was just plain trespassing. So obviously, don't trespass on his property because he'll shoot your ass.
Yeah, unfortunately for him, he doesn't own the air. So... that's just a silly thing to do. And sometimes you see people just take things a bit too far. You got a drone, you got a problem with it, call the police.
And if you're shooting into the air,
property down. What if he had a camera attached to a bird? You're going to shoot the bird too? I mean, just a silliness.
Go on, Jeff.
And it's really dangerous. Yeah, if you shoot into the air, even if you're hitting the drone, keep in mind he was using a shotgun. So that means there was a bunch of pellets. All those pellets go up and they all come back down. So that means that he was potentially exposing other people in his neighborhood to the risk of being shot. It was really stupid of him to shoot that drone out of the sky.
Hang on. I've been hit with shotgun pellets and from someone that shot in the air and shot a pheasant, and the pellets landed on me and I was about 100 yards away. And they didn't hurt me in the slightest. A shotgun's got an effective range of about 30 meters. And then
nonetheless, if shotgun pellets are raining down out of the sky on little kids, wait to see how the parents react. Especially in a place where everyone can have a gun.
I totally agree. I think the endangerment, it's criminal damage. So that's you're not going to get any debate out of me on that one. I think the endangerment bit is stretching it a bit, although he should be getting a firearms charge of some description for doing that.
But did he do it with that gun because he didn't want to endanger other people, or was that just the fastest thing he could grab, and would he have used something else more dangerous? When you grab a gun and you say, and I'm not I own a gun, so I don't have an issue with somebody owning a gun, but if that's your reaction, let me just shoot this thing out of the sky, I don't believe that he just used that particular one. It's like, well, let me grab this one just in case a pistol. He wasn't thinking like that. In fact, he wasn't thinking. Because when you look at your rationale, which is what if he was looking to steal something? So if some, body's walking across your house and he looks suspicious, you can just shoot him too? It's just, dude, this is silliness to me.
I'm talking to a father of a 12-year-old child. If what I know about drones and cameras hanging off them, if one's hovering above my garden, and my daughter's splashing around the paddling pool, and it's hovering over my garden, I feel that I have some right to take some sort of action against that. Whether it be
call the police.
I do.
Call the police and put up a canopy.
Well, I don't own a firearm, but I'd probably throw something very heavy at it.
Right, dude, I mean, you're missing the obvious thing here. That is why you own a boomerang.
You're brilliant.
I threw nothing. You're low.
And when they come, and you've got to be careful here, because there is a criminal damage charge here, because it's clearly not your property and you are clearly damaging it. I have a policeman to my left as well who can verify this. But
yes.
If you say, I was throwing my boomerang and he flew through the path of the boomerang, there was nothing I could do, officer, that's the end of the case. They're never going to get it any further than that.
Genius.
Absolutely.
Now, delete this show and never broadcast it ever again.
There's a rat.
Our lips are all sealed.
There was a rat in the garden the other day. And it feeds on the bird feeder, so I shot it to get rid of it with an air rifle.
Delete.
And no, it's okay. And then Sharon said, "So, what if you'd have missed?" I'm like, "Well, I didn't. I used this." Oh no, she said, "What had you got there to stop the pellet?" And I'd got the fence, and I know the pellet's.
But you had a rat to stop the pellet.
Well, exactly. That's fine. What I said. I used the rat to stop the pellet. but I know the pellets I've got don't go through the fence because I've tried. There you go. But it was just like, you know, if I've got a rat in my garden, someone goes, "Oh, you horrible person, you shoot animals." It's a rat. Deserves it. There you go. Clean headshot.
Totally a rat.
I did tweet out a picture a few years ago that said, "See, here's a rat proving that in Birmingham you're never more than 30 yards from an air rifle."
I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think that's just a crazy reaction to something like that. I understand being annoyed. I don't have...
All right, Chris has gone again. See, I told you Windows 10 was shit. Blue Sons was shit. Anyway, no, the thing I was going to say, the reason I picked this story is because I don't know about the FAA in the US, but in the CAA, the Civil Aviation Authority here in the UK, what he was doing is absolutely illegal. They would definitely have been prosecuted by the CAA for what they did, because if you've got a drone, you cannot be within 50 metres of a structure that you do not own or a person who is not under your direct control. So that's an employee or someone who has licensed you to be within 50 metres of them. If you put a camera on your drone, you cannot be within 150 metres of a building you don't own or a person who is not under your control. And there's also areas as well, if you've got a drone, you cannot fly it within the V's of approach to airports as well. And they're big. They are massive.
Because that's interesting, because I always brought up on last week's show as a story, because the UK government are actually thinking of a code of ethics for drone flying. Is that the same sort of thing?
It's already there. It's been there for model aircraft since model aircraft started. If you've got a model aircraft under 7.5 kilos...
You have an incoming call from Chris Ashley.
Don't worry.
Yeah, you're right.
Don't worry, I can edit. If you've got a model aircraft under 7.5 kilos, the 50 meter limit has been there for 20 years.
And unmanned aircraft.
The only one that's changed, I think, is if you add a camera to it, because no one had a camera added to it before. So.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. I'm seeing it right now.
And you can't. You must not fly it over any form of transportation route, so you can't go over a roadway or a railway or any kind of airfield or anything like that with it. And you must stay in direct line of sight control, and you cannot exceed a distance from the model aircraft of more than 500 metres.
Because what was that thing, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, where, wasn't it, there was like a load of cars on fire. I don't know if it was in America or not, but they couldn't...
Yeah, it was in California. It was one of the wildfires, and it crossed over a highway. The fire departments couldn't do their job. They couldn't bring in their aerial vehicles to help suppress a fire because of all the drones that were flying to get shots of the fire.
Yeah, there's a reward for them, isn't there? There's like a... several hundred dollars or something like that for them.
It's nonsense like that. Go ahead and give a nice little pulse wave that disrupts communication and sends those things to the ground. Yeah, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem where common sense makes it takes over. But that other stuff isn't common sense. Sense, you're trying to put out a fire and you got the least dummies flying their drones because they want to make the next YouTube hit video. Go ahead and put those down. I don't have a problem with that.
So the chat room as well, when we were talking about, we started talking about this, they sort of, what about EMP? Yeah, because my EMP pulse cannon is right next to my air rifle. Saying,
go and grab one.
Maybe this guy thought that's what he was doing. He grabbed his shotgun instead of his EM pulse cannon when he ran outside. He fired in the air. And he was like, whoops.
Don't tell me that there's an EM pulse cannon available on Banggood or something like that.
Oh, there probably is.
Really? It's the pulse cannon.
Yeah.
EMP pulse cannon. Now, so my point was that I thought this would be a good discussion because in the UK, it is already covered in legislation that you cannot do what this guy has done. Now, you're not equally allowed to shoot him out of the sky, so that part's covered as well over here. But you don't seem to have any legislation there for that kind of thing.
No, not yet, but it's been coming up a lot lately over the last 2 years because, you know, people flying them too close to, where planes can come through and, privacy things come up as well, which I think is a valid conversation. But there's nothing on the books yet. I don't know if anyone's actually put something on the books yet either.
Now, we do have federal regulations for model aircraft and other small flying devices that apply to military installations, to airports and government facilities. So we already have that, and that applies to drones automatically. And then there are different cities and counties around the country that have enacted specific drone laws. So depending on where you are, there are limitations on exactly how, where, and when you can fly drones.
Right.
But it's not like a nationwide standardized set of laws.
I wonder if they'll ban them at concerts.
They should do after what's his name? He lost his hand.
Yeah, Enrique Iglesias.
Oh, yeah.
He got some fingers cut. I guess he's a... got them, put it back on, or I don't know if they came all the way off, but yeah, there definitely is a dangerous aspect to them.
The interesting thing as well, Batwinch has said that there is you can make your own EMP generator, and she's put a link in the chat room, so I'll put that in the show notes there for you.
That's awesome. Batwinch, you're the best.
Yeah, absolutely. So clearly it is a possibility. And the other thing,
and it's handheld.
Because of what it is, all you need is like a set of bolas. So when you go underneath it, you throw up the bolas, and the bolas get caught in the blades, and the thing drops out of the sky, and that wouldn't be criminal damage then.
Ah.
Because the bolas isn't bad enough to damage the craft. It's the drop that can... See?
Yeah. You do something slick like that, I give you a pat on the back.
No, it wouldn't work, apparently. Willis says that would be still criminal damage anyway.
Ah.
But I think you've got less chance of a night in jail, though, than using a shotgun. Yeah? Yeah, definitely.
I think so.
This podcast and others is brought to you by UK2. They're fantastic. We love them to bits. We had a bit of a problem with the website today and the server. It went down. And we had some a disk error that had just cropped up out of nowhere. But it took them a little while this time because of the fact that you know, they were rebuilding the whole thing with a brand new disk in it. But a couple of hours later, everything's back up and hunky-dory, just in time or just after the Mac show should have happened at 3 o'clock. So thanks to UK2. Fantastic job. They are the best as far as... support goes, without a question. Please check them out, britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors to get the offer codes, or britishtechnetwork.com/UK2, and you can go straight through. Please use that as well to log in, and then they know we sent you, so you're a returning customer. And thanks to 100TB, because that was the interesting thing. We were going to do the Mac show, and everyone's like, oh no, we can't stream live. Yeah, we can, because the 100TB server is still there, and it's still absolutely fantastic and blistering. All you need is the IP and a copy of ELC, and you can watch everything that we do live. There you go, no problem at all. $139 a month, it's a US service, so if you're over there, they will spread the data load as well with the UK2 servers over on this side of the Atlantic to help you out with distribution as well. All of our content goes to the entire world 2 seconds after we say it, thanks to the distributed content management that's on the server that we've got from 100TB. So huge props and thanks very much to them as well. We do love them to bits. They're wonderful. They're great. And if you'd like your caricature with Len Peralta, then send us an email to btncaricatures@gmail.com and we'll get yours sorted. The wall is starting to fill nicely, thank you very much. Drew has had his done, aka Mr. Batwinge, he's had his done this week, so that'll be going up at the weekend, and yet more will be on the way. And Tuesday, watch out on Tuesday, because I will be with Muller at Hoya. Yes, we are going to go out to the Hoya factory in Wrexham and meet up with Mark, and we're going to watch my glasses being made.
Cool.
So I'm going to periscope it out when we get there. We're getting there about 10 o'clock, so be around your periscope about somewhere between 10 and 12, and you'll see my glasses being made. They're awesome. I can't believe that. And I'll be walking away with the glasses at the end of that, and then we'll have an official unboxing on the Mac Show, which is on Thursday at 7 p.m. next week. So check it out. Thanks to Mark and Hoya for doing these. And then I'm going to sit and use them for a couple of weeks, and then I'm going to review them. So I can't wait. I've got to say, I want to see around a glasses factory that mills their glasses, because I've never been one that grinds them. So it should be awesome. Superb. Thank you very much to Mark and Hoya as well. And I think Muller's talked his way into buying a pair. Yeah, he has. He's gone and got he went and got his eyes measured yesterday. So he's sent off the prescription. I think he's going to buy a pair when he's up there as well on the trip. And if you want to join us that night, on Tuesday night, we're going to go out in Wales for some dark sky photography near Dalgethley, and then we're going to do MacLoop on Wednesday. So if you want to come along and join us, you're more than welcome to. Get the day off work, and we'll be at MacLoop on Wednesday morning, probably about 10:30, shooting high-speed flying jets going through a narrow alleyway. The Americans, they fly a little bit higher because they're a bunch of pussies, but the British, they go through. they go through like 100 metres off the road, and it's really weird when you, because you're looking at the Americans going over and they're over your head because they're only just at the top of the mountain, and you look at the Brits coming through in gnats, and they're 25 feet below where you stood. Proper flying, that is, mate. Proper flying. Cool things then, chaps. Chris Ashley, start us off with your first cool thing. Put a link in the
chat box, mate. So, I have something that's really cool. It's the Sculpt Ergonomic Keyboard. If one thing Microsoft makes pretty well is hardware. And the keyboards, I've always loved. I don't know how other people feel about them, but I always loved their hardware, especially their keyboards. And they have a new set that comes out. It's the Sculpt Ergonomic Keyboard. They have two different ones you can get. One is just the keyboard and the mouse with the Sculpt mouse. And then the other one is with the keyboard, which has the separation in it, has the lift on it. But this one's magnetic now. So if you want to use it, you don't have to click it in anymore. It just kind of is magnetically held in place, and it gives that lift off the table. And then it also has a separate number keypad, which is what I've been dying to find, with just a little separate number keypad, because I don't use it that often. I don't need it spread across the desk. But I have a soft phone for work, and sometimes when I want to dial the phone numbers, I hate having to just kind of move to the right. I'd rather have that separate keyboard so I can keep my hand out. You know, you can't tell I'm a big guy, and I got massive hands. And so, you know, it's just more comfortable for me to put the keyboard way out so that I can bat, bat, and dial off my phone numbers on it. So this thing is really, really nice and really, really comfortable. So if you're looking for a new keyboard set, it's an all wireless one adapter into a USB port. Check out Microsoft's new Sculpt Ergonomic keyboards.
Now, which side is the B on? Because that was the problem with the old ergonomic keyboard, was that the B was on the wrong bloody side.
It's this one's on the left side,
which is the correct side, because the old one used to be on the right side.
Yeah, it's on the left side.
Yes,
it's nice, and it, you know, that raise up, man, it's so comfortable. And it's the padding underneath on the bottom is really soft and smooth, and it's just real comfortable when you lay your hand on there, man. They knocked
all right,
this
all
one
right,
out.
All right, dude. People think you're having an affair with it in a minute. Jesus Christ.
Hello, I don't know. Is it getting hot in here?
Oh, man. Ashley's got wood.
Sorry. Yes.
You're sounding like the preacher out of Come to America Again.
All right, we're good now.
Gilligan's Island.
It's like, because Microsoft brought Gilligan to the island.
Jeffrey, save us, dude.
All right, so there's this photographer. His name is Vesa Latimake. And what he started doing, and this is a while ago, was taking his kids' Star Wars Lego kits and posing them and taking photographs. And the photographs that he was taking are fracking amazing, like really, really cool stuff. So he was putting all this stuff up on his website, and he had it all up on Flickr. And now it's in a book. So DK has put together a book of his stuff, and it's called Lego Star Wars Little Scenes in a Big Universe or Big Galaxy,
small,
I think.
Small Scenes, Big Galaxy.
And so it has a bunch of shots where he's staged scenes from the movies, but then a bunch of other things that he's done, like what you're showing right now, where Darth Vader goes skiing and totally screws it up. Okay. And just wonderful, fun, amazingly great shots. And it's all done with Lego. And the book comes out November 10th. It's $24.99. That's dollars, $24.99. But if you go to Amazon, it's like half price if you pre-order it. So I ordered my copy today. So $12.50, and it's just awesome.
What impresses me is the lighting, because the cantina shot there that I've just put up is absolutely incredible.
Oh, yeah. All the stuff that he does is awesome. He's done some other shots where he takes other types of models, and where it's not Lego. And those shots are amazing too. He's done some stuff where he took a model of the Millennium Falcon and did some forced perspective, and so it looks like it's lifting off from a little opening in the woods. And he's done some stuff where he has X-wings and Y-wings that are just models, but you wouldn't. It, just the way he takes his shots, you would think they were real. It's really cool the stuff he does.
People are going to look at that and go, well, okay, I've seen people illuminated like that, so it can't be that hard. If you've got a light to illuminate a person, it's a big light. You can't use the same light to illuminate something as small as a piece of Lego and do it accurately. The lighting on those has blown my socks off. That is amazing.
I know. It is really cool.
Absolutely awesome. Well done to that man. And Batman just put a link in, so it's available in the .co.uk Amazon store, so yeah.
Oh, and Batwinch says you get it a week earlier in the UK, which makes sense because DK is a UK publisher.
Right. Okay.
So, of course, you're going to get a little perk.
So righty boy, you're going to have to just pad out, really, mate, because I'll be buying this now while you're talking. So.
Do you give a link?
I did. So tell me through what your cool thing is here. This is interesting.
So I'm really, it still blows me away after years and years of using the iPhone and just what developers will do with the hardware. And the app I've got, and I've given you a video for, a thing called Race to the Sun. And it's kind of, do you remember Space Harrier on the old Sega game?
Yeah, yeah.
It reminds me of that. And just, it's £4. Yes, you've got to pay some money. And I'm playing this for a couple of days now, and you just use touch controls left and right and that sort of thing. But if you just look at it, that's a phone. That's just a phone game. And it won't run on older systems. So if you haven't got anything above an iPhone 6, it won't run. That's the sort of power that it needs. But that is just an absolutely awesomely gorgeous game. And some of the, obviously this is level one that you're looking at right now, but some of the kind of puzzles it gives you in future levels, they're so hard to do. Well, they're called Region 2, and you'll see right now on the screen, apologies for people who are listening on audio, but you'll see that it gets absolutely crazy in a little while there. And it's just like the most brilliant kind of puzzle stroke flight simulator game you could ever play. And I saw it. I watched a video for it. I just thought, £4? And we've been playing it for 3 or 4 days. You know, school holidays are upon us, and keeping the daughter entertained.
This is really cool.
That's awesome,
just,
yeah.
What amazed me, it's a brilliant game, but I'm looking at it on the video right now, and I'm just thinking, this is on my phone. And this is the wonderful thing about apps on mobile device, not just iPhone or on any phone, that the mobile gaming is just coming on leaps and bounds, and it's just absolutely beautiful as well.
It does look very good, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. £4 if you want it.
Oh, this show's going to make me sodding bankrupt.
Sorry, mate.
Well done. Super. I like that. I like that a lot. My cool thing is a piece of camera equipment. And it's something I got last week and I used for the first time. And I was blown away with it, but not at first. So here we go. It's the Manfrotto Video Monopod. It's $149.99 on Amazon.co.uk with Prime, of course. Yes, and what's kind of cool about it is it's a monopod like you'd use in any other kind of monopod. But I got suckered into the problem was I started using it like a monopod. So I had my left hand here and I had my hand on the camera and I was constantly looking at it, forgetting, of course, that I've got a video control arm here that I can push out. And as soon as I got to the idea of actually I want to sit back from it and hold onto the video control arm, it started working beautifully. It's got a little tripod thing that you pull out here. Now, you can't stand it on that, but that gives you a really nice, stable, firm base to then shoot off. And it's got a universal kind of ball joint here that rotates around at the bottom that needs a bit of oil in it, it has to be said. This thing is absolutely awesome once you get it in and start working with it. It's got a full video head at the top with the slider so you can get the balance right. You can undo the variable tension here to get the pivot on it for forwards and back. It absolutely blew my mind, and I shot some video with it. And normally monopods, if I get into really tight environments, I'll use a monopod because, you know, you can't pick up and drop down a tripod constantly because it's just too big. And the problem with the monopod stuff is I can keep it reasonably steady, but there's always a couple of little shakes, especially if I'm doing interviews and things like that, that are noticeable. I used this for an entire shoot down in a tunnel, and it was awesome. There was absolutely no shake on it whatsoever. Blew me away. Absolutely blew me away. And I'm now at the stage where I'm sitting thinking, I don't know if I want to carry a proper tripod anymore for doing video. I think I'm going to take this with me instead. But like I said, the problem was I was using it like a monopod, like a photographic monopod. And once I stopped and started to use it like a video tripod, it instantly got 10 times more useful. And I really was blown away with it. And you can get, I've had me 200mm lens on here with a 6D with the battery grip. It supports the weight beautifully. Don't stand it up and let go of it. It is not a tripod. Those 3 feet at the bottom are not meant to be tripods, but they give you a nice firm base to hold that point there so that you can actually start to move the thing around on the ball joint that's at the bottom. Awesome. Amazon.
Love it.
Prime, £150. And the other thing as well is, because we're going out to do some dark sky stuff next week, Willis says, "Oh, I'm going to take my binoculars with me, but they're big and heavy." If you've got binoculars, monopod is what you want, definitely. And if you get a monopod, it's the only time you'll ever hear me recommend a friction ball joint for a camera top, because normally they're crap. Once you've got them, the grip wears off on them, and the camera just flops around all over the place. But if you use one that's got a hand trigger, then stick your binoculars on the top of that, and you've got instant easy movement just by gripping the hand trigger and moving it. Well worth the extra money. Right, okay, where can we get a hold of you, Big Chris?
You can always find me on the greatest, funniest tech show on earth, the British
this
Tech
one.
Network.
Yeah.
Once in a while. But you can also find me on the SMR podcast. We do a show every week, three friends just talking about anything, but mostly about tech. You can also catch me on Twitter at Big Chris Ashley on Twitter.
Good man. And you're always welcome on me, mate. Anytime you want to come on. No worries.
Thank you, sir.
Especially in the summer because we run short on guests dead easy. it's starting to bite now. Jeffrey, where are you, sir?
I'm hanging out over at MacObserver.com and at FreshBrewedTales.com and on Twitter and Instagram. I am Jay Gamut. And I'm on a ton of podcasts. So, of course, you can see me here. You can hear me on Apple Context Machine, the Mac Observer Daily Observations show, the iOS show. I kind of get around.
You tart.
I know. Yeah, no. I'm easy like that.
Yes, you are.
But I'm good. So, or at least that's what I hear. Jeff, we're not talking about podcasts anymore, are we?
Jeff Gamut, the Bend Over Podcaster. do you podcast for Ashley Madison, says iBookery? Probably.
I ought to.
You ought to. If Andrew had let him, he would. And last but my name is Lee Righty Boy.
So I'm my boy. I'll be at Paulum's on Twitter and always BritishTechNetwork.com.
Thank you, Michael Doobie Doobie Doo.
So
Righty Boy. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next week. Both shows are on Thursday. We're going to put this out on the Mac feed this week so that you know that you can listen to it. Both shows are on Thursday. It'll be Mac from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And then from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. it will be Big Show. A 4-hour marathon through here. Ah, it'd be well worth it. And then I've got to go on nights afterwards. Why not be nice? See you all next week.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening.